south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. So, what about gringos and expats who get scammed down here in Latin America? There's plenty of them. And like I've said in many shows in the past, if you're in Costa Rica or Panama or Cancun, anywhere on the gringo tourist trail, the fact is, as soon as you hire your lawyer, expect to get scammed. Now, you longtime listeners might remember the story I told a long, long time ago when I first started this show, some 400 shows ago. I mentioned when I first landed in Costa Rica and picked up my first Costa Rican lawyer, because you're going to need a lawyer eventually, the guy never actually ripped me off, but he ripped a few of my friends off. That is, some of my gringo first world buddies that wanted referrals because I was stupid and knew no Spanish back then. And neither did they. But they figured since I was the first one down and had a lawyer already, he'd have my seal of approval. Well, he did at first. So then you might ask, why didn't he rip me off when I was a stupid target way back when? He certainly could have and could have taken me to the cleaners. In fact, I think he really did rip me off here and there. He used to have an uncanny way of phoning me up after I'd started something, let's say residency, and saying, well, it's taking a little bit longer and we're going to need about $500 more to grease the skids. So beware of professionals, especially lawyers down here in Latin America, who give you a price. Then, a couple of weeks later or whenever, phone you up and give you some story about wanting a bit more. Sure, there might be a good reason, it might be justified, but for this guy, every single time he added on some charges at a later date. But back then, I was glad to do it because initially things seemed so cheap in Costa Rica, though they're not at all anymore. So then, the reason why he didn't rip me off, not in an obvious way anyway, later I found out was because his brand new British wife happened to be a good friend of mine from when I did a stint in the university up in the UK. In fact, she was one of the first persons I looked up when I got down to Costa Rica. I didn't know anybody else. And then you might ask, how'd she end up down there? Well, her dad was a manager of a British gold mining company stationed in Costa Rica, and his family had lived down there for many years. So now she's married to this fresh young Costa Rican lawyer. I think he was out of law school like 2 years. He spoke English. He came from a respectable family. His dad was a doctor and his sister a professional cellist in the Costa Rican Symphony Orchestra. Not to mention he looked like Antonio Banderas' shorter brother. So then why wouldn't I use this guy as my lawyer? Seemed a cinch, right? And back then, he only had a handful of gringo clients, which, of course, for him, turned out to be the best kind. So in effect, for him, some 25 years ago, when Costa Rica was first getting on the radar, still kind of budding, and there wasn't a huge influx of gringos, I was kind of a pipeline for him for referrals, gringo referrals. And later, I found out little by little, he had ripped off pretty much all the people I referred to him. Now, as it turns out, he never really ripped off anyone for big money, nothing over 10 or 15 grand. Nothing a gringo couldn't afford to lose or sue over. Tourist trail lawyers are slick that way, you know. And I don't mean he blatantly ripped them off by stealing money out of their transit account or just walking off with a hoard of cash that they left with him. The fact is, he was an expert at rearranging real estate deals so that one person in the deal, the gringo, always got stuck holding the short end of the stick. Though, because gringos are starry-eyed at the tropical paradise they've found when they first get to Costa Rica, they generally don't find out for a couple of years until they try to sell that property, let's say, that they've been overcharged for the property or overbilled for the legal services. Or worse yet, and more common, that there's title problems. Anyway, there came a time when I was doing some business with a Canadian friend of mine, and we happened to have the same lawyer, the guy I'm referring to. So, to eliminate the conflict of interest, I went out and found another one. Now, I figured at the time I just was going to find another lawyer to do this one deal and then go back to the other lawyer and have everything else in the future done by him. So, this new lawyer I met somewhere at a party, turns out he's a professor of law at one of the Costa Rican universities. And then along the way, I realized he also wrote verse and had a couple of books of poetry published, hardcover. Now, I'm not into poetry at all, nor opera or ballet. So call me a culture slug if you like. However, in a past life, I played in symphony orchestras myself, so I know a bit about culture. Not that I have any of it, but like porn, I recognize it when I see it. And this guy came to realize after sitting down and talking with him a bit and having dinner, here in front of me was a one-of-a-kind, a real, honest, straightforward, humble, timid guy, a poet, a teacher, and a guy, sad to say, had a kind of a gimpy leg, and he walked with a limp. So he did lay on a few childhood stories that were pretty sad, you know, because kids are cruel and all that. Now, I'm not going to say he pulled himself up by the bootstraps, because that would be in bad taste. Like, that's ever stopped me. But he was a sensitive guy who conquered a lot of obstacles. There in Costa Rica, 25 years ago, against all odds, I found a completely honest, straightforward, humble, timid lawyer who I knew was not going to rip me off. Now, remember, my first lawyer didn't rip me off either, but I was lucky. Certainly due to the connection I had with his wife. But soon enough, along the way, I started hearing stories about how he'd been gouging people, specifically gringos. Yet back then, 25 years ago, when a Costa Rican lawyer on the gringo tourist trail gouged you, you practically didn't know it or feel it. I mean, let's face it, if you don't speak Spanish, you're at the complete mercy of what this guy says and tells you. For example, back then, I referred a gringo friend of mine to him who had left the U.S. in a hurry after having a bad divorce, some judgments against him, and then a business failure, bankruptcy, and a few things he never even told me about. So he quickly voted with his feet, kind of fled to Costa Rica. You know, back then, it was the place to go. Mexico and Costa Rica were practically the only places that a gringo could escape, you know, to get way under the radar and kind of disappear. Remember, this is before 9/11, and it was pretty easy to kind of just drop out of sight back then. Anyway, after he arrived, I brought him to the office of my first lawyer, introduced him, and I remember my friend telling him his story. You know, lawyer confidentiality and all that, and I was his friend, so he just blabbered away with me in the room. So he said to the lawyer, "Look, one of the reasons I'm down here is I want to kind of disappear, you know, get off the radar, eliminate my footprint if I can. So I need you to do everything possible to kind of keep my name out of everything. Because, you know, there are some people up in the States I kind of pissed off and I owe a lot of money to, and maybe, just maybe, they could come down and look for me and make some trouble." In fact, he said, "Look, I'm even worried about the embassy. I don't need anyone tracking me. And if I keep my mouth shut and don't correspond with anybody up in the States, the only way I could possibly get tracked is through the embassy. I just want to relax and live in peace. Forget about what happened up there and just start over." We got the impression he owed people big money up in the States, maybe even the IRS, but he didn't exactly say, and that certain people or even the government weren't going to easily forget about it. Though I remember him distinctly saying, "I think it's not out of the question that maybe someday someone could come looking for me." And he did take some good precautions that worked back then, but now these days in the age of the internet, I think he'd have been snatched. He said, "Look, I did not fly here directly from the States either. I planned it to go through Mexico, and then I took a bus through a land border through Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua, and on through to Costa Rica because I knew how lax the immigration people are and how sloppy the paperwork is when you walk through a land border." Now, you got to remember, back then, there weren't even any computers at the land borders. They had them at the international airports like Juan Santa Marina in Costa Rica. But those land borders, just a rat's nest of paperwork, and they just would stamp you on your way in and out. In fact, I remember going through Latin land borders many times where they never even wrote a thing down if you were a gringo. They just looked at that passport like it was good as gold, and hey, they stamped you, you were in. Even now, you can cross through a lot of out-of-the-way Latin American land borders, and you just walk through. There's just so many people hanging around and so much chaos that you can walk back and forth to each country's border station without anybody giving you a second look. However, if you're in a bus or a car, you'll have to go through the usual immigration process. So then, how's it possible you could walk across one border to another and no one give you a second look? Well, even now, even the locals of bordering towns on either side could just walk across and just wave. They didn't even have to show their paperwork. You know, just doing local commerce, trading dollars, selling Coca-Cola, hot lunches, snow cones, whatever. Turns out at every Latin land border, there are throngs of local people going back and forth all the time, and it's just kind of an unwritten rule that they pass through freely. Meanwhile, back at the lawyer's office, our gringo friend whipped out his passport and showed us the stamp on his passport from a land border. And then our mutual lawyer said this to him. So you think maybe your name's going to pop up someday at the embassy and someone's going to try to find you, huh? Well, then let me throw this at you. If you're worried about the embassy or Interpol or just what kind of dirt might come through by official channels on you, well, I have a cousin that works here at the American Embassy in Costa Rica. And he occasionally does some favors for me. And I can have a little talk with him and see if he could check the files, you know, the dispatches in and out, every, let's say, week or so, for better or for worse, to see if your name shows up. That way, you'll know way in advance if anybody's looking for you. Don't worry, he said. Yeah, right, famous Latin lawyer last words. Don't worry, he repeated. I'll have my cousin check. He'll know if there's any inquiries out on you. Because he said, you know, even though it's the American Embassy, things work pretty slow down here. And with that, my gringo's friend's eyes just lit up, and he said, yeah, that would be great. Then the lawyer said, of course, we'll have to give him a little something here and there, not much, you know, just to keep him on the ball. And the gringo said, sure, sure, that's only natural. So anyway, about 6 months went by, and I was in and out of the country, and I ran into my friend again. I asked him, of course, how were things going? He said, oh, man, I'm doing great. I'm living in Alajuela now. Got a nice apartment, beautiful view, $400 a month. Beautiful Latin girlfriend. Living the life of Riley, man. Then I said, I guess that means you're not having any trouble. I mean, it's all clear. Nothing's coming down on you right now, then, huh? He said, no, no, my lawyer's cousin's all over that, and nothing's come up. He said, you know, having an inside guy at the embassy, that's the ticket. Really lowers the stress levels, if you know what I mean. And I said, have you met him yet? And he said, no, no. He says, I don't want to meet the guy. No, no, that wouldn't be cool. I just let my lawyer handle it. I give the guy a little money here and there, a few hundred here, a few hundred there, you know, to keep the guy happy and all that. But no, no, I never want to see the guy. I want to keep this thing at an arm's length. He doesn't know me. I don't know him. Okay, so far so good for him. Then another couple months went by and I ran into him again. Then we went through the how's it going bit. And he told me a little story. He said, having a guy on the inside of the embassy turned out to be a lifesaver. What happened, he said, was that he got a call from the lawyer that the guy spotted his name on a query in the embassy that just came in. And when I asked the lawyer what next, he told me not to worry because his cousin pulled that notice before anyone ever saw it. Anyway, he said, they get so much paperwork over there, things get lost all the time. Sure, it cost me $1,000 to make the thing disappear, he said. If that's what it takes to save my neck, I'm okay with that. Now, in the end, I lost track of my friend. Don't know where he is today. I don't think he's in the States, and I don't think he's in Costa Rica. He really did slip off the radar. But here's the epilogue to that story. Well, another 6 months or so went by, and I was at a party at the lawyer's house. And his British wife, remember, she's a friend of mine, she introduced me to her husband's cousin. And I said, oh, is he the guy that works at the embassy? She said, what embassy? I said, the U.S. embassy. She said, no, he's studying architecture at the university. Guillermo doesn't have any cousins working at the embassy. She said, except for the one at architecture school, none of the cousins work. They're all too young. They're kids. So that, along with other little instances I heard about, having to do with my somewhat shady lawyer, Guillermo, it made me realize that when you're on the gringo tourist trail, like Costa Rica, Panama, etc., the big advantage for these lawyers out there is that you don't speak any Spanish. The fact is, they like to keep it that way. Sure, they'll encourage you and say, hey, how's that Spanish going? Learning it yet? If you need somebody, I've got someone can help you. The fact is, as they encourage you, they really want to keep you at the kindergarten level. Now, remember earlier I mentioned there was another lawyer, a university professor, poet, suffered as a child the taunts and slings of his peers because he had a gimpy leg and all that. So anyway, I hired that guy to represent me in a deal I did with a Canadian. And one day, and I'll never forget this, we were sitting in his office, and he was informing me that something unfortunate had come up on a property we were building storage units on. He said the zoning board didn't want to give me an exemption for various reasons. There were exactly 5 reasons. 5 $100 bills, one for each board member. So he said, look, for $500, you'll get your zoning variance. He said, I don't like to work that way. I don't like paying mordida, bribes. That's just the kind of thing that gives Latin countries a bad name. Which is why I recommend every gringo and expat have a good, straight, upfront, honest lawyer like myself, and a sort of corrupt one. And when people have to get paid off, and they do have to get paid off, or things just don't get done down here, we'll just use another lawyer for the sleazy stuff. Then he winked and said, you know, sometimes I really think I went into the wrong profession. My dad and his dad were honest lawyers, so I guess it's in the blood. Then he looked out the window and pointed at his car and he says, look, I'm an honest lawyer and it shows. And out there on the street, he had a 10-year-old Isuzu Trooper. Remember those? Then I said, what are we going to do about this zoning thing? He said, we can use your other lawyer, Guillermo so-and-so. I'd rather not say his name right now, though I should, but I just don't want to kill that lifelong friendship I've had with his wife. Then I reiterated, so we'll use Guillermo then, right? And my straight arrow lawyer, Chepe, said, sure, he'll do. Because, you know, Costa Rica is a small country, and especially in San Jose, all the lawyers know each other, and they know each other's reputations, too. So then you might ask, how many good ones as a percentage are there in Costa Rica? Not many. I'd say, if you're lucky, 10% of them are straight up and on the level. And even if you locate one, you'll be paying gringo prices. So again, in the how easy is it for gringos and expats to get scammed department, here's a little story I just heard yesterday from one of my gringo expat friends who's been down here in Latin America now for, I think, about 18 years. So you think he should have known better. But as you'll see, it's not all that simple. Now, let me set this up by saying this is a good friend of mine who's owned quite a few maquilas in his day. He's had maquila factories in Honduras, Jamaica, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. And right now he owns 3 such factories, so like he tells me, he's always bringing containers in from guess where? China. That would be shipping containers full of raw material, rolls of all different kinds of cloth, cotton, thread, denim, etc., and containers full of all the doodads and spangles and cleats, the studs and the flashy, brilliant glitter stuff. That's all the fashion these days. I wouldn't know. I'm not very fashionable. By the way, when you dress in fashion down here, they say you're in la moda, which translates to the mode or fashion. Anyway, he has all that stuff shipped in mostly from China and Indonesia and brings it down to his factories in Central America where they produce garments or add the little touches and doodads to shoulder pads and belts and boots and buckles and finished shirts and pants and coats too. Oh, and by the way, he's a real interesting character. We always make a visit to one of his factories during the Expat Wisdom Tour. If you come down to my Expat Wisdom Seminar in July, you'll meet him yourself and hear his stories as part of our Boots on the Ground portion of the seminar. He's such a nice guy. He always offers to help expat gringos out in their endeavors in business and commerce, import, export, etc. He's a real encyclopedia of doing business in Latin America and has a million contacts. But you'll only get to meet guys like him if you come down to the seminar. In fact, quite a few of our expat wisdom people who've returned to Central America have had meetings and lunches with him to suss out their own business ideas. Now, like I said, he's a gringo, but when he came down to Central America, he married a Latin lady who's a lawyer. Again with the lawyers, huh? Now, remember, we're talking way off the gringo tourist trail here. And I know her and her work and some of her clients personally, and she comes highly recommended by me. But you'll find that all out for yourself if you come to the seminar. So let me put in a plug before I finish this story. Just go to expatwisdom.com, click on the seminar link, check it out. All the information's there. The seminar starts in about a month, so you've got plenty of time to sign up. And though, as they say, you'll be drinking from the fire hose, a pleasant time is guaranteed for all. So again, expatwisdom.com, click on the seminar link and check it out. So anyway, my maquila-owning expat gringo friend told me a little story just yesterday that's sending a bit of a shock through the maquila manufacturing industry down here, especially in Central America. He says just about a month ago, he was signing off on a routine order to ship a container full of clothing, material, and supplies from China, destined for one of his factories in Central America. And typically how these things go, he said, you send half of the value of the container by wire transfer, in this case to a Chinese company's bank account, somewhere in the Far East. Then, when the money clears in a day or so, they fill the container. The next step is they send you notice that it's ready to ship and it's sitting at the port. And that's when you're to send the second half of the payment. Now, just when my friend was about to send that second payment, which was $13,000, he got an email from the Chinese company telling him to wire it to an alternate bank account. Not so unusual, he said. Things like that happen all the time. They gave him the Swiss codes and account numbers and all that, and he did. He sent it. Now, he's not using a U.S. bank to do the wire transfer. He, a long time ago, became a five-flagger, if you know what I mean. If you listen to my old Five Flags program or the new Flagonomics program, you'll hear a story or two about the very guy we're talking about. That said, he's made it a point never to use U.S. banks unless he absolutely has to. So a day or two went by and he got another email from the Chinese saying, "Where's the payment?" He said, "Well, I sent it to your alternate bank. Didn't you receive it?" They said, "What alternate bank?" And he told them, and they said, "That's not their bank," and they never sent him an email instructing him to change the wire transfer instructions. Then, as you might imagine, more emails flew back and forth. Then he frantically made a trip to his Latin bank, and he immediately put a stop on the wire transfer, and they said, "Sorry, it went through already." And he said, "Wait a minute, it was a scam, it was a ripoff. In fact, I got hacked." Then he showed him the emails and said, "I was given totally false information and told to send a wire transfer to a bank. And now I find out the email wasn't legit at all. It wasn't from the company." And the bank said, "Naturally, sorry, you gave the order. The money went." Now, he said that was about 2 weeks ago, and he sat back, licking his wounds ever since. Man, was he pissed off. He phoned a dozen or so of his Maquila buddies and told them to watch out themselves because there was a hacker on the loose. Now, he said none of them had ever heard of a story like that. He was the first. The unlucky first mark. Now, as far as computer use, he's just your average Joe. He's got computers and smartphones, but he knows little about computer security for the individual. I mean, who really does? Of course, he uses Google, Facebook, and WhatsApp and all that, just like 99% of the rest of the world. And, you know, he, like so many other people, put all kinds of personal and banking and credit card information out there in emails and thus got hacked. But there is a bright, if not totally ironic, end to the story. About a week ago, he got a call from his bank, and they said, "Guess what? The money reappeared in his account." And he said, "Wow, that's great, but how could that be?" Well, as it turns out, most countries in Latin America are on a money laundering blacklist, meaning any wire transfer or transaction over $10,000 can be heavily scrutinized by your bank or any bank you make the wire transfer to. The fact is, they can refuse the funds. And as it turns out, the receiving bank in Malaysia or wherever it was saw the dough was coming from a blacklisted country. They wouldn't process the transaction until questions were answered about its origin. You know, it's that old know your customer BS. So by dumb luck, those normally intrusive and abusive Big Brother international money laundering laws allowed the bank to stop the completion of the transaction, and he got his dough back. How's that for a twist of fate? It's that one strange and rare case where those Big Brother money laundering laws actually worked in someone's favor. Go figure, huh? Now, it looks to me in this case it was a very easy hack. So then what does the average computer user do about all that? How do you protect yourself? Can you protect yourself? I mean, with Google and Yahoo and Skype and Facebook collecting every little thing on you as well as the NSA, even so, guess what? There are some very good ways to protect yourself, and I'm going to tell you about them right now. And I know you've probably never heard this anywhere, but I'm going to give it to you straight, and it's easy. Now, you can stop 90% of that spying and data collection stuff with three easy steps. First of all, you set your Firefox, which is my favorite web browser. That's Mozilla Firefox. Why? Because you can go into the settings and click off a lot of boxes that let you shut down data collection. Now, you can do this with Internet Explorer or any other web browser too, but with Firefox, you got a lot of options, believe me. In settings, you set it to delete your cookies when you log off. Now, admittedly, they've buried it like 10 screens down in the settings, meaning they're making it hard for you to do that, but it's there. You'll find it. Click that box. Now, I'm talking about the privacy settings on your browser. So again, click on Delete My Cookies Every Time I Log Out. And there's another setting that I love that you can disable. Just click the one that says Do Not Allow Cookies from Google. And since there's about 15 or 20 cookies coming from Google, you'll have to enter them all individually. You'll see them there and deselect all of them individually. Then Google will not be able to place those cookies on your browser. In other words, Google can't track you or store your search data. And finally, go to a website called ghostery.com. That's ghost, like, you know, Ghostbusters, ghostery.com. Now, this is the coolest thing, and it's free. It's a very simple plugin that you put into your browser. And what it does is it alerts you to all the trackers and people trying to check your information, as well as all the add-ons and bugs and web cookies that other sites are trying to place. Basically, it reports and blocks all the websites that are trying to get in and take pieces of your data and spy on you. It alerts you instantly, so one by one, you could just turn them all off. In other words, tell them to shove it where the sun don't shine. So you tell Ghostery to turn all those trackers off by default. So while you land on a web page, it'll tell you exactly who's trying to track you right there. And you know, in some of the pages I've logged on, there have been 15, 20, even 25 different places trying to track me from that site. No wonder it's so easy for trackers and hackers to collect everything they want on you. And you'll see that list. It's a little purple box in the corner. You should keep it open. Don't hide it, at least at first. Let it pop up. It's amazing to watch how other sites try to steal your info and track you. And from then on the right side of your screen, when you're getting all that information about ads and such, yes, there will be ads. You can't stop that completely. But they'll be generic, none of them tailored to you. For example, if you recently went to Amazon and looked up baby pacifiers, lawn mowers, flavored butt plugs, or double-duty colostomy bags, you'll get no ads for related items popping up on the right side of the screen. You'll not be tracked. You'll get nothing directed at you or your past searches. The only ads that'll pop up will be those annoying, generic ones that are intended for everyone. But most of all, the best advice is don't use Google. Use startpage.com. It's a site that uses Google but strips off all the search information. And remember, if you use Yahoo or Gmail, Google will single out keywords in your emails and send you related ads. That's why if you're going to use Gmail or Yahoo, don't say anything you wouldn't want the world to know. And for that secret confidential stuff you want to write, use an anonymous encrypted site like startmail.com. You'll have to pay for it, but it's really secure. Just remember, any email service you don't have to pay for, that they say is for free, how do you think they stay in business? By collecting data on you and selling it. Oh, and by the way, if you have Firefox as your web browser, in the settings, there's what they call a cookie destructor. Firefox has got a lot of cool things like that. Oh, and by the way, did you know that every single app that you set up on your smartphone helps itself too, that is, steals your contact list? Yep, those trackers want all your contact email addresses and phone numbers and everything else you've logged in about your friends.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.